Hi, everybody. And happy, meaning some of you don't even know this, but happy Buddha's Enlightenment Day. Wow. Buddhism. We celebrate Buddha's Enlightenment Day always on the seventh day of a retreat that we have the first week in December. And in Japan, it's generally done on December 8th, but different parts of the world, it's done at different times. So we've been having kind of an unusual celebration here, some of us, meaning that we've been sitting still for a week or 5 days or 2 days, but that's not unusual for us Zen folks. That's what we do. That's what we do. That's what we do to celebrate. That's what we do to party. Well, we do other kinds of partying too. So welcome. Welcome to this celebration. And what we're celebrating is Buddha's enlightenment, Buddha's awakening, Buddha's wakefulness as the promise, a promise of our own. He's promising that we can do that. And I've been promising these people for a week they can do this. And they can, and so can you. And it's a very simple process. A very simple, straightforward process. Suzuki Roshi, my first teacher, in his book, It's Not Always So, or Not Always So, talks about this process as one of caring for the soil. Caring for the soil. He says, instead of being interested in food that it comes from the freezer, actually he says the refrigerator, the freezer, the microwave, we should be interested in how to produce food from the field, from the garden, from the ground, And supposedly, according to the story, when Buddha had his awakening, he then met the three ascetics who had been practicing with him before he had modified his practice from one of austerity to one of the middle way, eating and meditating and sleeping and meditating and going to the bathroom and meditating, just like we and just like we've been doing, some of us, for quite a while now. And many of you have a practice like this at home. If not, I recommend it. I mean, this is what Zen is all about. Anyway, he saw the three ascetics saw him, and they noticed that he seemed transformed, that his eyes seemed to have a real clarity, a real depth, a real endlessness. And they said, "What's going on?" In whatever. I mean, I'm sure they did it in a more, you know, the way Indians did things then. Doubt if they said, "What's going on?" But he touched the ground. He touched the earth. That's all he did. Just simply touched the earth. And that's this Zen practice is about. It's about touching the earth, the ground. And living from that. So then we can experience an openness, an availability, a happiness, which can't be packaged, can't be kept, can't save it up, can't take it with you home. You've accumulated how much after sitting for so many days? How much are you going to be able to keep, store? Maybe if you have just the right environment. Nobody bums you out. You just stay with the right people. You'll be able to keep it. That's canned food. That's canned food. That's frozen food. That's microwave food. We're talking about the ground. Food from the ground. That's what we're talking about. And we're not talking about it. We're doing it. We're returning to the bare ground time and time again. Time and time again. And when we notice that we're getting seduced by the quality of the plant that's supposed to be growing and ain't growing, or is going too small or too scraggly or too diseased, we just come back to the ground. We just come back to the ground. So when I was young, and I had a young family, we lived in northern Minnesota, and we homesteaded. Why anybody would choose northern Minnesota to homestead, especially from given where I'm from, but we won't get into that right now. We homesteaded. So for 3 years, we tried to grow all our own food except grains. And it was wonderful. It was hard, but it was wonderful. It was wonderful. And something about growing your own food, at least for us, but I noticed it for the other, and these were sort of counterculture days, right? Some of you have read about those days, but others of you may be almost as old as me. Other people, there were other people out there who were like doing this like us, too. And when we grew our own food, we were really pretty generous with our food, much more generous than we are now. Because once we'd grown something, once we'd grown some wonderful corn, we just wanted to share with everybody. We just wanted to share it. We got tomatoes. I mean, we were so delighted to just have the fruit at all that we just shared it. And that's what happens when you cultivate the ground. You just want to share whatever comes up because you're not focused on the product. The product comes out of this kind and considered effort to just dig and cultivate and aerate, compost, mulch. That's what this practice is about. That's what Zen is about. That's why the historical Buddha just touched the ground when they said, "What's going on here?" <That's> what, and I don't know if they got it. I don't know if they were really watching. You have to really watch to really touch the ground. So, when we first moved down here from northern Minnesota, we dug up our back lawn so we could plant vegetables. And we kept our vegetables. We had, every year they shrunk more and more and more. So now we have no vegetables left. No vegetables left. But Linda, my wife, still has her old habits. Still has her cultivating the ground habits. So every fall here when we rake up leaves, bag them up, Linda says, "Bring those leaves home. Bring them home." So I bring a carload of leaves home. She said, "That's not enough. Bring more home." "Well, we just have a small yard, Linda." "Where are you going to put them?" She said, "On the soil. Like we've always done, Tim, on the soil." And I said, "Yeah, but they're 1 foot, 2 foot, 3 feet thick." She said, "All the better. Taking care of the soil. She said, "Look at how rich our soil is because I've asked you to do this every year. If you're going to complain, look at the neighbor's yard." So this year I did 2 carloads, and she was gone out of the country. When she came home, she saw all these leaves in the backyard. But it was kind of snowy, so I did it kind of late. I'm afraid I'm going to have to go home and spread those leaves after retreat. So when we lived up in northern Minnesota, that was in the days that everybody had plenty of time. Does anybody can remember those days when people had plenty of time? This thing that we're doing in the 21st century is really odd, you guys. It's really odd. I don't know how we got into this. And, you know, Europeans don't know how we got into this either. It's just Americans that we don't have enough time. How many of you have enough time? Raise your hand if you have enough time. Oh, a couple. Oh, you got a few. Oh, a few followers of Shakyamuni Jay here. Wow. You're going to hang out with him. Good deal. We had enough time. There's enough time, you know. This is all a fabrication, this thing. I don't have enough time to sit. I got to rush to get to my sitting. Give me a break. Give me a break. Rush to get to your sitting? Think about that. Think about that. But we've created this situation. Human beings create these cultures, and they have wonderful features, and they have kind of bizarre features. Each culture has a wonderful and bizarre. So in those days, what did I do? I sat for an hour in the morning with my friend, and I got up. I milked the goats. We milked the goats. We had breakfast. We went out and cultivated the soil, dug the soil, and it was red clay soil. Red clay soil. So amazing, harder soil. You may think that you're red clay soil. You sat here for 2 days or 5 days or 7 days, and there's no aeration. It's just walk, walk. You may not think that. You may be nice aerated soil by now. But it's the same soil. It's the same soil. And if you put love into it, you put air into it, it comes to life. Something grows, which is wonderful. If you don't get hung up on the plant, but just take care of the soil, it happens. So we just work with this red clay soil. And then we sat an hour. Always we at least sat 2 hours a day, an hour at night, an hour at sunset. Best time to sit. For 2,000 years has been sunrise and sunset. An hour at sunset. Best time. I know no one has time for that anymore in this culture. That's why I have all these retreats here. That's why I want to get as many of you as possible. Because once you're here, you have time. You have too much time. All too much time now. That's why we have 25 days a year. I'd like to have 50 days a year. Really what I would like to do. So Linda, my wife, her brother came to visit us in northern Minnesota. Her brother, who is not alive anymore, who was an accountant in Lafayette, California. We're from California. With Arthur Anderson in the good old days. I don't know if any of you remember the good old days of Arthur Anderson. And I don't know why they came to visit us. Because they had a hard time. We were glad to have them, but they had a hard time, and they thought we were really weird. No, we were. We were really weird. I'm really weird. We're all really weird inside. We just questioned how much we admit it, right? Is there anybody who's not really weird inside? Raise your hand. I want to meet somebody who's not really weird inside. Some people just keep it together better than others on the outside, right? So Phil and Barbara came to visit us. And I think they brought their children. And we wanted to show them the wildlife up there. You know, it was great. Wolves howling at night in the old days, coyotes. And we loved to go to the bears. Oh, it was one of our favorite things, to go to the dump to see the bears. So we thought, well, we'll take them to the dump to see the bears. We took them in the car. The windows were all rolled up. We thought they'd like it. But they totally got freaked out. It was as if the bears were going to break into the car. They came up and kind of looked at us and snuggled up against the glass with their little nose, with their big noses. And they... Phil and Barbara freaked out. I said, Linda, that was not a good idea. Let's take them on a walk through the woods. She said, well, we don't have any trails. I said, well, there's some goat trails, you know. We had 40 acres of land. We got it for $5,000, 40 acres of land and a farmhouse and a high ridge overlooking the lake for $5,000. Do you remember those days? Many of you are too young. Too old, no, too young to remember those days. So we took a walk, but I forgot how bad the mosquitoes were. And they got all eaten up. And then I said, Linda, bad idea. She said, well, that was yours. So, you know, I don't want to go on with the story too long. But finally, Linda said, you know, Phil talked to me, Tim, and he said that we just lack common sense. And that especially I lack common sense in having married you. Common sense is good. We need common sense. But when you cultivate the ground, you're doing something uncommon. Something uncommon. Something that doesn't make common sense, just to keep cultivating. Just even if the soil is red clay, and you have to keep mulching it, keep aerating it, and it keeps flooding, and it keeps congealing. And you say to yourself, we should be making pots instead of trying to garden. That's what we used to say. But if you keep at it, beautiful plants will grow. They just grow on their own. So my first teacher, Suzuki Roshi, whom I'm talking about today, and whom I seem to talk about retreat after retreat after retreat. I don't know why. There he is. I would turn his picture over so he doesn't stare at me like that. He was a very simple person. He liked to work with earth and stones. That was really what he liked to do. And Tassajara, where we spent time when I was young, the Zen monastery, he would always be out there, not preparing for talks, not chatting it up. He didn't chat it up very much, except when he gave talks. Then he was like me. I don't know, this is a very odd tradition, you know, the way this just sort of comes out. He liked to work with rocks, he liked to work with stones, he liked to take care of the earth. And he didn't think of himself as a special person. When people said he was good, he said, I'm good, I'm good? Oh, I'm good because my students are good. He didn't know, he just stuck his shovel into the ground, tried to aerate it, tried to be with it, and loved it. So in this book here, he says at the end of a seven-day sesshin, he says, some of you have been sitting here for 7 days, some for 2 days, and 7 days ago or 2 days ago, you thought that if you sat here, your problems would solve themselves or fall away. But whatever problems you have, they are just enough. Just enough. If they all fall away, you are given more. Oh boy. Oh boy. What a religion. What a religion. You guys should try a different religion, I think. If they all fall away, you are given more, just so you can appreciate your problems. And my teacher's favorite food was potatoes. Well, it makes sense, doesn't it? Earth, stone, potatoes. But he didn't let on about his favorite food till we'd been living there for a while. And we had a wonderful, wonderful chef. His name was Ed Brown, and if you've read his books, Tassajara, whatever, Bread, whatever, his books are still around. Those books are still around, aren't they? Are those books still around? Yeah, okay. Yeah. So, he would produce this wonderful food, this scrumptious food, souffles and multiplicity of tastes in the food, so that at Tassajara, which is also often true in monastic life, but even true here in Sesshin, food is the only thing people have to look forward to. And of course, when we were at Tassajara, it was basically the only thing they talked about too, because on breaks it was like, what are we going to have next? Are we going to have and we crave sweets too. And when you live in sort of semi-deprived situation, I don't know if people consider this sesshin semi-deprived. Do you guys consider it semi-deprived? Yeah. He doesn't. No, they don't. Hey, she doesn't. Cool. Oh, we'll have to do this longer then. Let's stay another week, okay? So, really good food, wonderful food, and then those books came out of it. And, Ed didn't have any. Ed was my friend before this all started, before we did Tassajara. And he didn't have any experience cooking. He just got down there, and somebody had to be the head cook, so he started mixing stuff together. And we were growing food, too. So, anyway, the food was scrumptious, and I would say tantalizing, and a little bit on the rich side. And Suzuki Roshi said to me once, what do you think of the food? And I said, I like it a lot, but people talk about it all the time. I said, I think maybe it's almost too good. He said, yes, too good. And so then the word got out that the food he liked best was potatoes. So Ed found out that he liked potatoes. So then I think it was on Buddha's Enlightenment Day. I'm not sure, you guys. I think it was on Buddha's Enlightenment Day when just after the ceremony, it was time for lunch and we had our big bowls. And instead of having a nice souffle or a beautiful multiplicity of flavors, they just plunked down baked potatoes in our bowls. Some of us knew what was going on. We were delighted. Other people were pissed. that's the way it is, isn't it? Right? That's the way it is. That's the way it goes. So, if your problems fall away, you are given more, just so you can appreciate your problems. And he quoted Buddha. He claimed he was quoting Buddha when he said, the most precious thing in the world is to have dirt on your fingernails. And I have not been able to find that quote. I don't disbelieve him, but I've looked all through the sutras for that quote, and I mean, what context would a Buddha have said that? I don't know, but Suzuki Roshi insisted that Buddha said that. The most precious thing in the world, to have dirt on your fingernails. The most precious thing. Because it means you're alive. It means you're in touch with the ground. It means you're encountering it. You're working with it. You're playing with it. You're enjoying it. And something's growing out of that. So you've got dirt on your fingernails. You're not just trying to keep it all clean, all tidy, just show your public parts. Your private parts, your public parts, you're in it. You're acting as it, with it, through it, and it through you. Problem after problem, mistake after mistake. So in retreats, often it seems like we have more problems than when we don't come to retreats. Because our Zen retreats, as you guys know, are not what people think about when they think of as retreats in this culture. They're not easy. Now, I'm glad that some of these people are ready to stay for another week. I think I should call my wife. How many of you are ready to stay for another week? They didn't say that. Just my hope. See, I get big expectation myself. Oh, more people who will really cultivate the ground. If one of you really cultivates the ground, you'll encourage everybody to do it, and then pretty soon we'll have wonderful, rich soil. And what grows out of it, we don't know, but it's gonna be healthy. It's going to be nutritious. It's going to be alive. It's going to feed people. So, in devotional Buddhism, we ask for help for our problems. Like in devotional Christianity, devotional Judaism, devotional whateverism, we ask for help. And that's a good meditation practice. That's a good thing. We ask help in Buddhism, Tara, who is the mother of all Buddhas, and who is also born out of Avalokiteshvara's tear, the Bodhisattva of compassion, and was also innocent. She's only 16, the mother of all Buddhas. Innocent, open, because she is a manifestation of the ground. Completely innocent. But in Zen, we don't do her too much, but we can do her. Just like in all these traditions, there's a matriarch. There's a matriarch. There's Mary. There's Tara. In Hinduism, Kali. The mother Kali. The great mother Kali. So these devotional practices, I think, are wonderful to help us with our problems. Only problem is that often then we create an expectation. The expectation is that there'll be a plant that will come out of this. a tomato plant. I'll devote myself to Tara and she'll give me my tomato plant. But when I just get bare ground, then what's Tara up to? How could she do that to me? I gave myself to her over and over again. Well, all she gives me is bare ground. This devotional stuff sucks. But is it the devotional stuff that sucks? Or is it that we've forgotten? That we've forgotten that we do it to help us cultivate the bare ground, appreciate the bare ground. So, as many of you were involved in our last practice period, we have 7 week practice periods here, and one in the fall and one in the spring. I'm hesitating with spring because spring comes so late here in Minnesota, and we're starting it in, I think, February 10, the spring one. But we have a theme for our practice periods, and we had the theme. The theme was to try different meditative approaches, really to try them, and from the Buddhist tradition, including devotional approaches. And we went through from the beginning of Buddhism, and dipped in and tried them all the way to Zen, to Japanese Zen. So we started with the four foundations of mindfulness, with mindfulness of breathing, with mindfulness of mental contents, with mindfulness of mind, with mindfulness of body, and then we moved on to other things. We moved on to loving kindness meditation, dealing with hatred meditation. Then we got into Mahayana devotional Tara meditation, and having an image of the Buddha, which you look at, and that becomes the focus. That's what you use to bring yourself back. That's what you use to calm yourself. That's what you use to return to the ground. And then we got into Zen, and we started getting into Zen. It got more austere, not so much of these other techniques. But I still think these other techniques are wonderful. I recommend that you use them. I recommend that you use anything that can just help you come back to this. And then we got farther into the Zen, and we came to Wei Ning, and we came to from that to Dogen. And Wei Ning started this sort of anti-technique rebellion within Buddhism. Wei Ning said, to dwell in emptiness and keep a calm mind is not Zen. Not Zen. Because when we dwell in emptiness, when we try to keep a calm mind, we're just going to the refrigerator. We're just eating out of the refrigerator. We've forgotten that this is about the ground. We've forgotten. Now we forget again and again, and someone has to remind us. Someone has to remind us. Right here is the cultivation. Right here is the stillness. So Suzuki Roshi also says in this book, as he used to say all the time, if you cultivate the bare soil, you will encounter the treasure that you already have. You will encounter the treasure. You will appreciate the treasure that you already have with your dirty fingernails. You may not appreciate it at first, but if you keep cultivating it, you will appreciate it. And he says, again, no need to seek for anything. We've got just enough problems, not too many or too few. That's really all I want to say. I'm sorry if you still expect, those of you who haven't done a retreat, that retreats are going to solve problems. That's not what this is about. That's not what this is about. You can find a life like that, but the life like that that you live is going to be just microwaving and refrigerating and freezing, and you're going to be rushing around. You won't have enough time because you'll never have enough time. I'm trying to keep this in the refrigerator for so long. How long will it keep? How long will it last? What can you say? What can you do to be a little calmer or be a little purer? And then you're rushing around to this, trying some of this and some of that. And that's human beings. Human beings do that. It's not bad. But if you know that about yourself as a human being, and you remind yourself that you actually have the ability just to return to the bare soil and just put your hands in it, then you're okay. Then you're okay. Then you are fulfilling Buddha's promise of wakefulness as your own wakefulness, as your own enlightenment. And you're even appreciating a little bit of dirt on your fingernails. A little bit of dirt on your fingernails. Wow. You look at your fingernail, you see that dirt. Ooh. It's possible. It's possible. It's not something for you have to do some huge practice for, because it's always possible. Well, maybe I'll take a question or two, since I don't know why. I'll just take a question or two if somebody has something. But if nobody has anything, then we can just go back to sitting, and you guys who came this morning can go out and enjoy the snowflakes as they're falling. Anybody have anything? Yeah? You have to speak a little louder, please.
You said something like we're all kind of strange on the inside.
We're all what?
Strange or kind of.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
But I was thinking that actually we're goofy on the outside and pretty. And at our core, we're not strange at all.
At our core, we are not strange at all. That's right. At our core. Because. At our core. What I was alluding to was the fact that my favorite quote from Bob Dylan. Well, not my favorite. I have lots of favorite quotes from Bob Dylan. If my thought dreams could be seen, they'd put my mind in a guillotine. But you are perfectly right. You are perfectly right. Thank you. Anything else?
What was the Wei Ning?
Pardon?
What was the Wei Ning quote?
The Wei Ning quote. Well, there are lots of Wei Ning quotes. Yeah, but this quote is... Where is the Wei Ning quote? I don't remember it. But basically he says, to dwell in emptiness and to keep a calm mind is not Zen. And that's... So we have this idea of emptiness, of spaciousness. We want to dwell in it. That's why we're doing zazen, why we're doing meditation, to dwell in it. We don't want to dwell in all this guillotine stuff. You know, that's what we want to dwell in. But then we get captured by that, wanting to dwell in it, and it becomes something that we're trying to hang on to, that we're packaging, that we're trying to carry around with us, it's no longer coming from the bare soil. And we use meditation that way too. So to keep a calm mind is not Zen. You can't keep a calm mind. If you think you can, that's a great delusion. How can you keep it? How can you keep it? Then there's the you and there's the what you're trying to keep, and then there's not enough time because you're trying to keep your calm mind. How can you keep it? And you don't need to keep it. You don't need to keep anything. The bare soil produces its own food. Clay soil produces wonderful plants. It may only take 30 years of putting lots of mulch in, lots of compost. Doesn't matter. If your attitude is right, that something grows the moment you put your first mulch in. Something grows. And there's a deep happiness from just putting that first mulch in. A deep happiness. Because you're taking care of the ground. You're putting something over the ground to protect it, to show that you love it. And the love just comes back from the mulch and just pervades out because of your care, because of your lack of greed or self-aggrandizement.
Isn't he kind of saying, don't cultivate the soil, just let it be?
He's kind of saying that. He's kind of saying, just let it be. But he's also saying, you have to make an effort. You have to make an effort. Because if we say just let it be, then that's another thing we put in the refrigerator. It's the just let it be. Oh, now I'm just going to let it be. And now I'm just going to live a life just letting it be. And then we become sort of fake Taoists. A real Taoist is someone who's totally empty inside, who's really learned how to cultivate the ground. But a hippy dippy Taoist is just always, oh, I'll just be. And they're just screwing things up because they've got this idea of being, which is different from non-being, which is different from, they have this idea of effortlessness. We used to have this idea of effortlessness that made it so we messed everything up. So effort, effortlessness, being, non-being, cultivating, not cultivating. It's just the bare soil. It cultivates itself. Get out of the way. Let it cultivate itself. But you have to do something. You have to do something. I don't care what. You're a human being. You move as a human being. Take the mulch off the soil and just notice its barrenness. Just notice the red clayness of it, that it doesn't need anything, that it's totally complete, that you can build an adobe house out of it, right, just by looking at it. That's fine too. It's no different. No different. Anything else? Well, thank some of you for coming this morning, and thank some of you for staying so long at this party. I know this party has been kind of exhausting for some of you. Good parties are always exhausting. So let's keep it going for another few hours and see how exhausted we can get. Okay.